Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Welcome, welcome.
I'm Gianna.
And I'm Marie.
And this is Cereal from the Box, the podcast about eating and recovering and being your best and living your life.
Love it.
So, Marie, what's new?
Nothing really. It's been the same old for me.
What have you been up to lately?
School and not much else, honestly.
Nice.
School and school.
School and school. I love that for you. I'm so excited that you're almost done with school. This is your last year, right?
Yes, it is. That makes me nervous, you know?
Why?
'Cause then I have to be a working woman.
That is true. It's not that fun.
The workforce brings so many questions and much uncertainty.
Well, you can ask me about unconventional workforce life, and I'll answer all your questions.
Yeah, that's true. But what if I want questions about conventional workforce life?
Ask
Answers.
my sister.
That's so true. She's a working lady.
Yeah, I know. She's gonna be a lawyer.
That's so exciting. That's so intense. Is she taking an LSAT soon?
She already took it.
Capriola, ahead of
I
the
know.
game.
Everybody go follow at G Barty. She is literally my little cute genius sister.
We should have her on, like, next
I
episode.
know. I know, she's great.
Woo!
Yeah.
How have you been
Cool,
doing?
cool, cool. I've been good. This was like such a crazy like few weeks. We took 1 week off of the show because it was just a wild week.
Oh my God, yeah.
So basically, I had my birthday. I'm now 23. Whoop whoop. I sold my car. R.I.P. Gerald. I got a new car. Hello to Scooby, my new
What
car.
is Scooby?
Scooby is also a Volkswagen, but not as adorable. But
Oh,
still lovable.
what color?
Light brown.
Oh, Gianna, this is a new aesthetic for
I
you.
know,
J
I
just
know.
so everyone knows, Gianna's old car was this cute little red, what was it, a Golf?
Yeah.
Yeah, Golf Volkswagen, and it had this like old grandfather toot to its horn, and it was the cutest car ever.
You know what? It still toots, so at least it kept that. But so the
Yes.
guy I sold it to, when I like gave it to him and stuff, his dog was there, and his dog was like Scooby. His dog was named Scooby, and it was
Oh.
so cute. So like to kind of remember my old car, I named it Scooby so that it will,
I love that.
live on in my memories. And like I felt better about it because he was teaching his son how to drive in it, and I was like, that's like where I really learned how to drive.
Yeah.
So I had to give my car away for sale because it just kept breaking down too many times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then I had my birthday, and that was fun. I saw my friend who I didn't see in like so much time because of
Yeah.
Corona. Like they're being super careful, so we had like a socially distanced picnic. Like you can see, even like we took a picture together, and like I was very far away from her.
Yeah.
But yeah,
That's so
so
awesome.
that's what I've been up to.
Yeah. Exciting things. Lots of changes.
Yeah, too many.
Oh,
My mom gave me all these office clothes, and I really appreciate it, but I was like, I literally don't work in an office. Like, am I changing my aesthetic now? Like, what's even
You
happening?
could. Who's to say?
I could. Anyways.
Yeah. So for today's episode, we were gonna do a little Insta react. So we've each picked, like a couple posts that we found on Instagram that we kind of want to highlight or just share our opinions and thoughts on. And maybe that will kind of help you guys in turn. There are a lot of mine at least are pretty much, eating disorder recovery related. So if that's what you're here
That's,
for.
yeah, that's what I thought we were doing. So I picked ones from our page that I reposted.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Because I was like, I'll react to the ones that I put on.
Yeah, true. And then you can too explain, because if you guys don't know, Gianna mainly runs the Instagram account. Every now and then I'm on there doing some crazy shenanigans, but Gianna keeps that place very wonderful, informative, helpful, aesthetically pleasing.
I do my best. Sometimes I feel like my aesthetic choices are a little out the box.
That's okay.
But I do, you know, I try to keep it consistent, the neutrals.
Yeah, exactly. So it would definitely be interesting to hear from you why you chose to, you know, highlight those posts and repost them. So do you want to start with one of those?
Sure. So let me scroll down to one of our first posts that I made. Mm-hmm. And it says, it's from Christina Johnson, who on Instagram is at Encouraging Dietitian. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was hilarious because she wrote, "Your pupusas are welcome here." That was like in the caption. And so my family is partially from El Salvador. So that's why it kind of was like, oh my gosh, like El Salvador, even though she spelled it wrong, I understood what she meant. But she says the foods from your family and or origin are welcome in your recovery. And I think that's super, like, for me, that stood out right away because, I feel like a lot of other cultures' foods can be seen as kind of outside of what in the United States we're like pushed into eating, mm-hmm. in terms of being healthy, you know, the avocado toast and rice and chicken and broccoli or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't really know, but, like, I feel like a lot of times, especially when I was kind of struggling, I didn't want to eat foods that were cooked in a certain way or that contained certain ingredients that were really a part of the food from my culture.
Yeah.
Like, I went to El Salvador with my sister, like, while I was, like, maybe in my lowest point, and I literally did not enjoy the food on my trip because I was afraid to eat it.
Right.
So when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, yes, like I want to encourage people to eat their comfort foods from their family or like from their country where they're from, mm-hmm. like because it's not worth like losing those memories or those like cultural ties, mm-hmm. When you're giving in to your disorder.
Definitely. And I feel too like a lot of these foods are foods that maybe you would have had like really often in childhood. And I feel like the best way to like reconnect with your inner child, your childhood self, and rekindle that relationship with food that you used to have is by giving yourself the permission to engage in those cultural foods that used to be really prominent.
For sure.
And then also, I mean, like, food can be, like, a really big part of, like, family culture, too, especially for you.
Yeah.
Being Hispanic, like, you cannot partake and have a good time in your family events if you're not, you know, going to be enjoying the food as well, you know?
Yeah. I think that was, like, really hard for my family, mm-hmm. like, to be like, okay, so you're not going to eat this delicious food that we made.
Yeah.
And it just kind of makes you feel othered from everybody, mm-hmm. when you're like, oh, I can only eat my, like, plain whatever that I brought, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It reminds me, too, of there's the this girl on TikTok who I follow. I think her handle is This Is Iona. And she's from the UK. She has, like, a really great series kind of, like, around this where she, like, tries to recontextualize food and tries to make different recipes from different people's culture and stuff like that and kind of go from like what this post is saying and talk about how like it's okay to enjoy those foods and we should normalize, you know, how we feel around these foods and we should enjoy, you know, these cultures that we might be connected to. So
yeah,
if there's like a someone you should check out. I definitely recommend her, because I feel like she does a good job of like talking about this topic.
Cool.
So
her handle was This Is Iona, just for everyone yes. who is gonna go look that up.
Yep, on TikTok.
Woo.
We Gen really Z, yeah, I was about to say, I really got myself into that Gen Z life, even though we are Gen Z, but we're cuspers, so very close.
I feel like definitely in the last year I've become more Gen Z than I thought physically possible.
It's kind of a vibe. I'm not upset by it.
Also, I spend so much time with my students that I feel like I'm just like, sometimes I'm picking an outfit, I'm like, this is cute, and then I'm like, wait,
would a 14-year-old wear this?
Yes. I was like, I am 23. I am not 14. I cannot.
But maybe you could.
Like, I tried like some like space buns the other day. I was like,
I really wish I had a picture of that. That sounds really funny.
Oh, I'll send it to you.
Amazing. Okay, so this post that I have to share with everyone is from my friend Lucy. We met in treatment, and she has a really poppin' Instagram account that has a really good community over there. So her Instagram handle is Lucy, spelled with an IE, _shedding_layers. And so she made a post recently that was kind of all about relapse and what that means. So like, she's with her Instagram post is very thorough and kind of gives like the multiple slides and has a lot of resources and things like that, tips in her Instagram posts. So in this one particular, like the first picture in the series, it says, reminder, just because healing is not linear does not mean relapse is inevitable. And then stop normalizing relapse. So I think like this is like a really important issue to talk about, because I know when I was in treatment, there was like kind of like a conflicting message with like, you know, a lot of the time they wanted to normalize the fact that relapses happen, because what can happen is you kind of get into this like cycle where you're like thinking that recovery should only be linear, and then when you do have like a slip up or something like that, or you use behaviors, it's like, oh no, end of the world, I have to slide all the way back down again because my recovery is not linear. And that can be like a detrimental way about thinking about recovery, because we all know it's not super plain and simple. No, and straightforward. So They tend to try to like normalize normalize recovery, I do hope, but they also try to normalize relapse. But in some ways it can also be kind of detrimental, because it sends across like what Lucy was saying, the message that relapse is inevitable, or relapse has to be a part of your recovery, which it most certainly does not. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a confusing message to think around. And so in this post, Lucy talks about like the idea of a slip versus a lapse versus a prolapse versus a relapse. So I just wanted to take a second to talk about that specifically, just like based off of my own knowledge. And basically, so in college, I took a class on addictive behaviors, right? And mm-hmm. So technically, like, eating disorders fall into that same category, like addiction and substance use disorders and eating disorders.
That's so interesting.
Yeah,
that's so interesting.
They kind of go hand in hand in multiple ways. One, like, the treatment can be kind of similar between the two. And two, like, how we have to think about recovery can be really similar, right? Like, for a lot of people in recovery from like a substance use disorder might want to be fully sober or fully clean of that thing, in the same way that a lot of people in recovery from an eating disorder want to be completely free from their symptoms and behaviors, right? So in my class, we were kind of talking about this idea of relapse. And what my professor said that I found super interesting at the time is that there's a difference between a relapse, a lapse, and a prolapse. Mm-hmm. So to kind of like define what a lapse is, it's essentially that instance where you give in to using behaviors, right? Which I'm sure if you like reflect on your own journey and stuff like that, you can identify several times where like you quote unquote had a lapse, or you know, you were trying to, you know, maybe not use behaviors, but you ended up binging anyways or whatever it might be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are what we call lapses. It's just like, you know, more or less a single instance where you do use the behavior. But a lapse is neither, not that it's neither good or bad, but there's two different outcomes for it, right? So it could turn into a quote-unquote full-blown relapse, in the sense that if you have multiple lapses, one right after the other, after the other, after the other, and it gets harder and harder to kind of move forward from that lapse, it becomes a quote-unquote relapse, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people think that a relapse has to be you're hitting rock bottom all over again. But it most certainly does not have to be that way at all. And it is possible to move forward from quote-unquote a lapse. So if you do use behaviors, or you find yourself struggling with behaviors more in like a given week or something like that, you can always turn a lapse into a prolapse. So that's more or less having the active decision to be like, I notice that I'm using behaviors right now, and I know that this isn't helping me, it's not serving me, or I'm using behaviors for X, Y, and Z reason. So instead of being like, okay, well, things are too hard, I'm going to throw in the towel, I might as well just relapse so I'm worthy of starting the recovery process all over again, I'm going to choose for my next step to be recovery focused and move forward. And so I think what Lucy says in her post is that, you know, you can kind of propel yourself forward from a lapse into a prolapse. And I think like it's really important just having like support and like knowledge and information about what's going on so you can recognize that and be honest with yourself, so you don't have to have a full blown relapse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just think like it can be, I at least let me say, I found for me when I kind of heard about that in my addictions class, I felt it was like really similar, you know, to eating disorder recovery, because I feel like a lot of us feel like it's either it has to be super bad or it's going to be super good, and there's no in between. But I feel like in my own personal experience, like recovery's been a super hard journey filled with a lot of quote unquote messing up. And you know, it wasn't just like, you know, I started treatment and next thing I knew I never was, you know, I was symptom free. You know, like I wish, but
that happens.
Yeah, so it's like, I think, you know, what we should say is that it's normal to have lapses. It's normal that when all of our other coping skills fail, when we become too stressed out or emotionally overloaded, I guess, I don't know, like a better word, that maybe we might give in to using symptoms. But that doesn't have to make or break our entire recovery journey.
Right.
And it doesn't have to mean that we can like keep letting that happen as well. Like we do have to make the active choice to be in recovery, even if we didn't make the choice to have an eating disorder. So,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, that was just my two cents on that. And I don't know, hopefully you at least learned something, G.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, I feel like I always know, and like, I feel like when I'm starting to have a small lapse in judgment, and then luckily, I'm at the point where I can say, okay, that is enough.
Yeah.
Do not continue. And, like, I feel like especially during this COVID time, it has happened various times. Where I'm like, foot in, foot out. Foot in, foot out. And, like, luckily, I don't know, I'm at the point where I can tell myself to... I'm making a funny face. I don't know how to
articulate
my words. I'm a movement artist, guys. I just like to be like, no, stop it.
Yeah. To kind of...
Yeah.
I like when you said, like, lapse in judgment. Because I feel like sometimes, like, in the moment, things can be a lot. And then we find ourselves using those behaviors, but then when you can kind of get some clarity on the situation, then it's easier to be like, I don't think this is what I actually want.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So my next one that I chose is from at Dr. Colleen Reichman on Instagram.
Amazing.
And her quote says, "Can we normalize bloating? It doesn't always have to mean we need to jump to healing our gut." And this one just hit a little too close to home.
I do definitely agree.
For me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of how I had, when I had my most serious episode of eating disordered eating, I'm not really sure. Because I never got like a diagnosis anything.
When it
so
felt
I like,
the...
don't really know what to call it.
You can call it whatever feels right to you because it's your experience.
When it was the worst, I tried a diet, quote unquote, which will not be named, that I thought would, you know, I was having a lot of anxiety in my life, and so I was having a lot of stomach problems. As
of
one
course.
Does when they have extreme anxiety. And I was like, you know what, let me just, like, eliminate, like, every food group from my diet, because that's totally normal. And then I'll figure out what to put back, like an idiot, which, you know, it's like never, I'm sorry, if anybody here is going through that right now, this is your big sister advice to stop.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make your stomach feel better, because then you're even more anxious, because then you're afraid of everything. So you don't need to heal your gut, you need to heal your brain. From believing people that make a living and make money off of you not eating.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that, Colleen. yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what this kind of makes me think of? Because I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, I know people say that after you eat, like, you're stomach, like actual stomach, will, you know, expand because it is now filled with yummy food. And that, like, towards the end of the day, like, you're gonna be, like, quote unquote, bloated. I feel like we kind of conflate what bloated means, because for some people it means, like, I am having stomach pains, there is gas, whatever, whatever. Then I feel like colloquially bloating also means just, like, any time that my stomach doesn't look as flat as it usually does, or whatever. So I feel like, even though, like, I don't know, I just feel like we have such a long way to go and normalize bloating, because no matter how many Instagram posts that I see of people being like, look, this is what bloating looks like, it's all good, at the end of the day, like, when I'm quote-unquote bloated, because, you know, I've eaten all my food for the day, I'm like, this isn't normal. But, like, it, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to convince yourself.
I feel like I don't need to see any other, like, thin privileged women just being like,
yes,
look at my small round.
I think this,
like,
is why.
I get it.
Right.
I get it, okay? I have one, too. I don't need to see yours.
Yeah.
Like, yes, girl, body positive.
Right.
No, body positive is just accepting it and then moving on with your life. I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you know.
You know, I think, no, I totally agree with you. I think that's, like, why I've not, it does not feel normalized to me yet. It's because the people that are trying to normalize it tend to be thin white women who, even bloated, to me, don't look any different, you know what I mean? Or, like,
it's like, sorry, my six pack is just a little bit farther out than usually is.
Right. So, I mean, like, I'm sure everyone of all body sizes can still struggle with that and how they feel, especially if it causes physical discomfort and pain. But at the same time, it's like, it's hard to relate, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to relate, and it's hard to normalize if we're not showing all types of bodies
And it also just, like, depends on what kinds of foods you eat. Because, like, scientifically, some foods do cause gas to be inside of you. And those foods are good for you. You shouldn't stop eating the foods that are nutritious just because they make your stomach change its shape temporarily until you go take a shit. It's
fine. Yes. Yeah. This is why we wash our beans. But...
Oh, yeah. Really?
You're supposed to. Do you buy canned beans?
Yes.
Jenna, wash them. You gotta rinse them off.
How do you make your bean soup then? That's the bean juice.
Just put water in.
No, it doesn't taste the same.
I don't know how to help you.
I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm here accepting my bean body.
Can we make that a phrase? Accept your bean body?
I love that. Coining the phrase right now.
Right here, right now. Okay. I have a twofer. Are you ready?
Ooh.
Okay, it's a twofer because I think the posts tie into one another. First post is from at the Body Love Society. Mm-hmm. Can I read? Yes. Okay, so they said, the best way to stop binging on ice cream, something I have struggled with for sure. They said, start eating the ice cream you actually enjoy. Bye bye Halo Top, in parentheses, or any fake ice cream. So, while I agree with the overall sentiment of this post, I do believe it could be revised. So, I mean, let me speak to the caption as well, so I don't misrepresent the post. They're basically talking about, like, you know, let's stop the restrict binge cycle, right? If we're depriving ourselves of anything, whether it's eating the quote-unquote low-calorie ice cream or the quote-unquote healthy ice cream or whatever, we're still kind of approaching it from a restrictive mindset, for sure. And I think it's definitely important to start challenging the fears that you might have around any particular type of food by actually eating the food. Mm-hmm. That's, like, definitely super important to... you know, being able to stop binging, I guess. But I feel like the part that this post lacks is, like, the idea that simply eating the ice cream doesn't necessarily fix the problem. If we're saying the problem is quote-unquote binging. Which, to amend, I guess, what I'm saying. Not that binging is a problem, but I know that it can be really distressing. It can be guilt-inducing. Maybe it can make you physically feel bad and be uncomfortable physically and things like that. So if we kind of want to decrease the amount that we're using binging as a coping skill in our lives and also kind of break this restrict-then-binge pattern that a lot of us kind of fall into, right? I think it's more important to kind of shift our focus around how we feel about a binge and what we do when we do binge, because inevitably, you know, even if you do decide, okay, I'm no longer going to eat Halo Top, I'm going to eat the normal ice cream or whatever, the ice cream that I actually want, the flavor that I actually want, whatever it might be, there's a chance that you could still binge on it. So it's like, what do you do then? So that you don't automatically go, well, I can never have ice cream again because look what happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's where really embracing intuitive eating comes in.
Yeah.
Is because I feel like when you're eating this substitute for normal ice cream, for whatever reason, you know, whether it be, like, your fitness, quote-unquote fitness goals, or you're, like, trying to ease into eating things that were formerly your fear foods, like, there's a lot of reasons that these things exist and are very successful. Like, financially, they make a lot of money. Because they're freaking expensive. Like, I'm gonna pay $6 for that tiny little thing of ice cream. Enough said, though. But, like, I feel like you're not satisfied because you know it's not the thing you're craving. You're craving ice cream. You're not craving fake ice cream. And when you're, I feel like when you really embrace intuitive eating, and you realize that you don't have to eat it all at once, you know, it's going to be there for you tomorrow, then you, I feel like you're less likely to even binge on it because it becomes just like another food.
Yeah, I definitely think that like by devaluing food, by neutralizing if it's good or bad or whatever, and then also feeling like it's in abundance, that's what kind of counteracts that some of that restrictive mentality that we tend to have. And then you also are giving yourself like that full permission to actually have it whenever it is that you would want it. And so, I mean, this kind of relates to the other post that I wanted to share, because I feel like this is like a really good way that you can kind of mantra yourself through, I guess, like a binge if you do have one, right? Even if you aren't, you're trying not to restrict, you're trying to give yourself permission, but you binge anyways, right? For whatever reason. I feel like this post was really helpful. So it's by this person named Kelly. She's really prominent, I think, in like the body positivity, eating disorder recovery space. And she serves a lot of really great content and just good content on mental health. So
what's her handle?
Yeah, it's underscore Kelly U.
Okay, great.
And she has this post and it's just a picture of her. And then there's the words, the text over top, "No, you are not bad," in quotes. And then the next slide says, "No, you are not," in quotes, "just binge eating." And then it says, "You are coping. And what you're doing is not wrong. You need to forgive yourself, even when you feel like you don't deserve to." And then there's like just a couple other slides after that. But I feel like the text of her post for me really resonates, because I feel like it's so important to reframe how you think of a binge, because I think it's, like I was saying before, just really easy to kind of get into that cycle where you put so much guilt and shame on yourself for quote-unquote eating too much, and, you know, for kind of using that behavior. So yeah, I think like the idea of being able to forgive yourself for a binge, knowing that you're not doing anything wrong, even if it does happen, is definitely going to, you know, like encourage you to keep trying again and again and again. So even if you do binge on, you know, a fear food or something like that, you can always try again the next day to have it the way that you want to have it. And you just got to kind of keep doing that over and over and over again. Until one day you'll be able to do like what you were talking about earlier, is like take a really intuitive eating kind of approach, and if you want some, you have some, and you can stop having some when you no longer feel like it.
And like honestly, I feel like I just made it sound like, oh, just stop, like just do that. Like, I cannot tell you, like, I have eaten the whole, like, not the small thing of ice cream, I have eaten the whole thing of big ice cream before. And I feel like I was kept punishing myself for it, because when I was a kid, I don't know if I've shared this before, but I used to go in the laundry room and like bring the Cheerios and the Nutella with me. And I would eat it in the laundry room, and my mom would always find me, and I would be in trouble for it. Because like, that's not that good for you to, you know, eat the Cheerios.
You were also a kid.
And I was little, so I, like, I always, in my mind, was like, this is bad, this is bad. But now that, like, it's, like, been time overcoming it, but, like, it really does happen. So I just, like, say those things. I say those things, and I feel like I'm very lighthearted about them, but I say those things because I want people to realize, like, it can happen for you. Like, it is possible for you to, like, become an intuitive eater, even if you feel like you've never been.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And I feel like that's, like, with a lot of, like, recovery sentiments. Like, you see people that are fully recovered, and I think it can be really easy to fall into the mindset of like, well, they make it sound so easy, or like, how come I'm not like them? How come I'm not where they are? Like, what's wrong with me? That,
girl, it took me 23 years.
Same. Like, we are now.
Your birthday's
here.
Not Your birthday's not yet.
Look,
Your birthday's not
23
yet.
years
It's
and a
coming
month
up.
minus. Like, come on. Give it to me.
I'm the old one now.
Oh, an old Libra.
I am an elder.
An elder. But yeah, so that's all I wanted to share with those two. So yes, one, fuck Halo Top. But two, forgive yourself for binging, because there's no shame in being able to utilize a coping skill.
Also, I feel like just another thing about Halo Top is, like, I just have feelings about it.
Yeah, please
because,
share them all.
You know, I feel like it's, for some people, maybe it's a stepping stone. So if that's what it takes for you to get back into it, you know, you're, like, a little bit afraid. But just realize that beyond the chemical process of it, not that there's anything wrong with it. All food is chemicals, right? All food is chemicals. Mm-hmm. But there's a step beyond. So, like, keep going in the direction. You're on the right path.
Yeah.
Just don't be afraid to step off of diet culture and into the abyss.
A food freedom.
That made it sound so much better.
Okay, do you have another one, G?
Honestly, no. I was like, thought two was good. But I just found one. Okay, we're good.
Cool.
So this last one is from @healthanxiety. And it is a picture of a lady. And it says, but you don't look sick. And then on the lady's body is, like, all the symptoms of eating disorder that you might not see that aren't weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that, like, that's, like, one last, like, you know, poignant, like, just because you don't look like you're struggling doesn't mean that you aren't.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier to, like, if you don't have an expectation of what things look like, it's easier to admit to yourself and others that you need help or that you're interested in moving in a new direction.
Yeah.
Especially with, like orthorexia and stuff like that. Like, people may be praising you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For things that are really harming you. And so it's just important to, like, if you feel not yourself, if you feel, like, lost and, like, kind of being sucked into it,
yeah.
and but you don't look like it, like, there's still, like, a really valid struggle that you are going through and you should get some help or look to someone who can guide you.
I 110% agree. I don't think I could have said it better, honestly.
Wow, I'm honored.
Okay, I have one last thing to share. So this might be a little bit of story time, G, because I don't know.
Story time, baby.
This might not be something you're super familiar with. So this is from morelove.org. I was about to say morelove.org. This is not a website.
Is this an Instagram?
Yeah, it's an Instagram post, so there's no dot.
Morelove.org.
Yeah. So it says, parents see the problem as the eating disorder, but the child sees their eating disorder as the solution to a problem. And the next slide says, the child sees their parents' distress about the eating disorder and identifies that as a problem. So they attend treatment with the goal of reducing their parents' distress, not with the goal of actually ending the eating disorder. Because remember, the eating disorder is the child's solution to some other problem. Before an eating disorder goes away, we have to recognize what problem it is solving for the child. And it's not enough to say that it's solving the problem of, quote-unquote, wanting to be thin or, quote-unquote, having no control around food. The problem an eating disorder is typically solving is unresolved anxiety. When we treat the anxiety, the need to solve the problem with eating disorder behaviors goes away. And then it's a heart. Beautiful. So, okay, the reason that this stuck out to me is I feel like this post is really geared towards children and teens. Children can have eating disorders. But children's and teens, right? Like, I'm picturing probably, like, someone in high school, right, getting treatment because their parents are upset. Right, clearly, and concerned for their child, and the fact that they're using eating disorder behaviors, and that can be really scary for a parent. But obviously, like, there's plenty of people that develop eating disorders later in life, or, you know, still struggle with their eating disorder all the way through adulthood, into being elderly, things like that. But the reason that this stuck out with me is not because my parents made me get treatment, because they didn't. That was my decision. But it did kind of strike a chord, because I was thinking about all the parents, including like my own, that I know have participated in some way in their child's treatment, and how they react to it. And I feel like this is really true. Like, when I was doing, what was it? I guess the IOP program, we had like a night where like the family would come in, like you could bring out like supports. Yeah. It was basically any support. So it could be your parent, it could be a friend, a roommate, a romantic partner, whoever, right? And so you'd bring them in, and then we'd like do activities together, and it would be interesting, I guess, to kind of share different perspectives and whatnot. I don't really know. But I do remember one night that we did this in particular, where we had to, like, I think we had to write notes to our eating disorders, right? A common treatment theme. You can try it if you want. But so we wrote notes to our eating disorders. And, you know, different people have different reactions. Some people are really angry at their eating disorder, which is valid. You know, some people might feel more of like an ambivalence, or like a grieving or something like that, depending on like where you are in your own journey. But what was interesting is all the parents that wrote letters, they were all so mad. So angry. You know what I mean? Like, Jenna's making a little pouty face. No, well, I mean, it's like kind of sad to think about, like, in retrospect.
Yeah.
But what I remember the most clearly about it is, right, because, like, we're feeling super conflicted. Well, a lot of people are. Plenty of people feel angry or like, we're over this peace out eating disorder.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also plenty of people that are kind of like, I don't feel great. I don't know what to do with this. Recovery's scary, daunting, whatever.
Yeah.
And things are difficult. But, you know, all the parents would be like, the eating disorder has done this to us, and it's robbed our family, and it's taken my daughter away, and it's done all this stuff. And, like, the parents are so angry. And I remember one mom in particular kind of did this with her child, and...
That's so awkward.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is that, like, so you didn't have to read yours aloud, but she volunteered to read it out loud.
Of course. Of course. Thanks, Karen.
I just felt so bad, because I know, like, how she felt, like, the, the person that was in treatment with me. I know how she felt about the situation. It's like, what I think is hard, and I've had this in my personal experience. My mom wrote a letter of her own volition, and shared it in a family therapy session. A family therapy session we had at a different point in time. And it doesn't, when you hear that as like a kid, it doesn't sound like your parents are mad at the eating disorder. It 110% sounds like they're angry at you.
Yeah. Which, that's so hard.
Yeah, so it's like really difficult. And, you know, I think it's like important to educate parents, right? On why. You know, like, why even does this disorder happen for so many people? Why do we all kind of struggle with this?
I remember, like, when my, like, watching, because my sister actually was, like, in, like, physical danger, and I think my parents were more scared of, like, why is she in physical danger, why couldn't we do something, why, what did we do wrong, like, they weren't as upset as some of these other parents sound, but they were definitely like super scared. And I think that if they realized like what the root of the problems were, which they did figure out in, as you said, family therapy. I was not included in this, but
okay.
Their family, yeah. I live far away. What can I say? Oh,
okay, okay. I was about to be like,
but
we were in high school at the same time.
I am not in my family. I am adopted. Just kidding, I'm not. I do have some valid concerns about that.
Another day.
I don't look like any
That's
of them.
That's not true.
Anyways.
You look exactly like your dad.
Okay, moving on. But, yeah, they were just like, they worked out what the roots of the problems were, but, like, at the time when it was really getting scary, they were more scared, I think,
yeah.
than angry.
Well, I think, too, I'm sure that a lot of these parents do feel scared, but I think that being scared gets expressed as anger, and I think the longer that you have to sit on it as well, right, especially, like, when you, I mean, I think I can imagine before starting the treatment process, depending on what that looks like for you as an individual. Yeah. Like, a lot of parents might be really scared. They're not sure how they can help. They're not sure how exactly this got to this point or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just burped. Anyways. I ate some peanut butter pretzels before this.
Yum.
But, yeah, so... Yeah, I can really imagine how, like, a lot of being scared is, like, an initial reaction. But, you know, depending on, like, the family dynamics and stuff like that, I feel like the longer that it goes on, that doesn't make sense. You know, the more into the recovery process that a person is, especially if they're going through, like, a formalized treatment setting, seeing a therapist, nutritionist, whatever, I think that being scared can transition very quickly into anger or be masked by anger. You know what I mean? Because I still feel like at the end of the day, there's the confusion of like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
And like the post said, like you're kind of only really seeing what those problems are, like what problems it's causing in your family, what problems it's causing for the individual themselves, especially like, you know, people enter... start their recovery journeys at like different points in time and feeling different levels of like motivation and, you know, I to some degree, I guess, like ambivalence of whether or not recovery is really what they want. And I think that's like super valid, but as someone that fully sees the eating disorder as only a bad thing and not something that's serving a purpose or could be, you know, helping alleviate anxiety,
like a comfort, depression,
yeah, some kind of comfort or something like that, it can be really hard to hear, here's all the things that are wrong with you, and that all these problems that you're causing, especially because, I mean, it takes so long, maybe we could do a podcast about this, like separating your identity from the eating disorder.
Yeah.
That's a work and a half. You know what I mean? But it's really easy from someone from the outside to be able to kind of see those as two separate things. But when you're hearing them criticize the eating disorder, it feels like they're criticizing you just as equally.
On the same kind of vein of like family and stuff, I have one more thing that I wanted to share. And
yeah,
it's super, I feel like, personal. I don't know about you. So it's from our friend Colleen, Dr. Colleen Reichman. Yeah. And it says, reparenting yourself around food can look like reminding yourself that it's okay to be upset when your mom restricts. She is human and may be stuck in diet culture.
Yeah, I hear that for you. Mine's a little different,
yeah.
But I do hear that.
Like, I love my mom.
Sure.
I love my mom. She's super supportive in, like, you know, eating whatever, doing whatever. But... as a kid and like growing up, I just like have such vivid memories of her being like, I'm just gonna eat these. I'm so full. Oh, woe is me. I can't eat salad at night because it makes my stomach hurt. And I can't eat eggs after I eat fruit because they'll just be fermenting. Like, all these things.
Yeah, just all these, like, rules.
All these rules, and it really has taken me up till now to, like, try to let go of them. For example, again, I love you, Claudia, so much. I love you. She calls me, and we spent the weekend together. She goes, Gianna, do you eat vegetables? And I was like, yeah, like, we ate vegetables this weekend. She's like, no, we didn't. I said, we had tomato sauce. That's a vegetable. And she's like, tomato sauce is not a vegetable. I mean green things. You should eat them twice a week. Eat salad twice a week. And I was like, I like to put my vegetables into things. Like, I don't have to eat salad. I can eat different things that just contain vegetables in them. Like, for example, you can get chicken nuggets that have vegetables in them. I'm not saying I did that. Under no circumstances am I saying I did that. But it's possible. You know?
There's, many ways to get vegetables. And it's not the end of the world if your meal doesn't have a green in it.
I was so upset about this. I was so upset. And then I was like, you know what? It's okay that I'm upset about this, but I'm just going to let it go because I'm not going to change her mind of this, like, culture that she believes in and that she's grown up in. And it's okay to be upset if, like, I see her or see if, like, if you see your mom doing things that are just like, I'm trying to recover and you are literally doing things I'm recovering from. It's okay.
Right.
It happens and it's just, you have to let it go.
Yeah, I think for me, like, well, one, obviously, like, it can be really triggering. like, shout out to the time that my parents went on Weight Watchers. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should do that. I didn't do that.
Good.
Would have been a really bad idea.
I bet your nutritionist and therapist would have literally shanked you.
Well, I don't think that's ethical for them to do, but in their minds.
Excuse me, licensed clinical social worker in training. So sorry.
But yeah, so I think it, like, definitely can be triggering, and I think because, like, I am not assertive and I don't set adequate boundaries oftentimes, I think
you're just calling yourself out.
A little. I'm trying to say it in a nice way. I was trying to avoid saying I'm passive aggressive sometimes, but I am. I'll take ownership.
You're Scorpio. It's your thing.
But I feel like for me it becomes like resentment. It's like, this is upsetting me, so now I'm resentful.
Me too.
And I might say something really, like, snappy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I found, I guess, like, kind of in relation to the post, I found, like, it's important to acknowledge, like, I don't like this. This is triggering for me. And it makes me feel some type of way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can identify that emotion, even better. But yeah, at the same time, it's just kind of like, how do you prioritize yourself and, you know, parent yourself in the way that you wish you could have been parented?
Yeah. There was this, podcast called The Food Psych, and she was answering a question from, like, a teenage girl listener who's like, my parents say, like, really triggering things, but, like, they don't, how can they not understand that, like, this is the, like, I need them to do this. And it's like, you can't make other people do other things. All you can do is, like, educate people without being mean and hope that it sticks.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's, like, definitely something to be said about setting a boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you need to set a boundary, by all means, I think you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think boundary setting is, like, hard work. I've definitely, with friends, have had to been, like, you know, I would really appreciate if we don't talk about this subject.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when we talk about this subject, it makes me feel X, Y, and Z way.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. So I'd appreciate if we don't talk about that. And I've had, once I've placed those boundaries, gotten, you know, the sentiment of, like, well, you know, well, that makes me feel X, Y, and Z way, and I'm upset that you want to limit what I can say and what I can't say, and it hurts me that whatever. I don't remember, like, the details of the situation, but it was kind of more or less that sentiment of like, I tried to set a boundary and then my boundary kind of got pushed back. It made the other person upset. And then, you know, from there on out, like that boundary wasn't really like well enforced on my end either.
Mm-hmm.
So it can definitely be like a tricky situation.
Yeah.
And I think, I guess what I was trying to say is that you can set a boundary, but I think sometimes we have to be wary that the boundary isn't always going to be respected because we can only control our actions and not other people's mm-hmm. actions, which I think is what you were trying to say as well.
Yeah. You're just so much more eloquent than me.
No, I'm not. Stop. But yeah, I think that about does it for today's episode. Hopefully you learned something new, or you can relate to any of the things that we shared. And if you would like, you can most certainly send us an email at cerealfromthebox@gmail.com.
Or DM us your best memes, and I'll post them on memes. Our page as long as they're aesthetic. Just kidding.
That's a lot of pressure.
I'm a whore.
Well, we'd
for
love
a
to
meme.
See them anyways. We'd love to see them anyways. Please tell us, you know, what you thought, what you could relate to. We'd love to start a conversation with you.
Please.
And build a community.
Also, you can follow me for dance content at Gianna Bartolini on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram at Cereal from the Box as well. Please let us know how we're doing. We'd love to get to know you guys and talk about things that really matter to you.
Boo.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.